produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. This is Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Seattle Hempfest is normally held on the third weekend of the year on a stretch of parkland right there along the Puget Sound. Just beautiful. But of course, thanks to COVID, there was nothing normal about 2020. There was no way for thousands of people to gather in a park for the world's largest protestival this year. So, Seattle Hempfest went virtual. I had the honor of putting together a panel on marijuana and media for this year's Hempfest Hemposium stage. We're going to hear some of that on this edition of Free Culture Radio. Featured on that panel were Angela Baca, a freelance writer and investigative journalist based in Southern California, Tahid Chappelle, a journalist who works at Free Press in Philadelphia, Kimone Freeman, a writer and performer who co-founded and directs We Act Radio in Washington, D.C., Vanessa Maria Graber, a journalist and radio producer in Philadelphia, and moderator Steve Bloom, a journalist, editor, and publisher based in Brooklyn, New York.
So, Vanessa, I basically would like everybody to sort of kind of just go around the horn here and just tell everybody what you've been up to lately and how have you been dealing with COVID? What has your life been like for the last 6 months?
Thanks for the opportunity to be here. And it's great to share with all of you. Most recently, I joined the staff of Free Press, and I've been doing a lot of work with journalists in New Jersey and community members, along with my colleague Tahid, who's doing that work in Philly, and just doing a lot of listening, right? Like, it's almost like a listening tour of what people need. My work focus is specifically on meeting the public's information needs during the pandemic. So that gives me a lot of insight on what people are experiencing directly, especially in places like New Jersey, Northern New Jersey, especially. It was hit really bad with the pandemic at one point. New York and North Jersey were the epicenter. And so what I've been discovering is that, people are living under pretty bad conditions, especially communities of color who have been disproportionately affected by COVID. And that's been exacerbated by the existing conditions of poverty that we are experiencing here in Philadelphia and in other big cities like New York, Chicago, LA, et cetera. So I work on many different things. Of course, I produce a show called People Power Lunch Hour that's all about social movements. So I cover local organizing campaigns that have been happening. That for about 20 years, I've been covering protests, starting with the anti-war protests in the early 2000s. Most recently, I've been covering the uprisings happening in Philly. So when things were on fire, they burned police cars, the Starbucks, like I was right there filming, inhaling the fumes and seeing the chaos unfold. There's been continued organizing with the Movement for Black Lives and Philadelphia Coalition for Real Justice in terms of calling for police and prison abolition. So I've done media around that as well. I've also been covering a homeless encampment. There's actually three homeless encampments in Philadelphia, which of course is a result of the crisis and lack of affordable housing, which of course many cities across America can relate, and trying to understand more what solutions are on the table for getting people into affordable housing. Of course, you might have seen a huge victory in Philadelphia this week. The city announced that it would be giving 50 vacant homes to the housing rights organizers. So that's really exciting. And activists across the United States have been commenting on that. So it's always exciting to be in Philly. You know, there's always a lot of activism and people pushing hard for different things. I'm also involved, you see my little flag back here, I'm Puerto Rican, and I've been trying to get out the vote here in Philly with the Latinx community. There isn't a lot of engagement with voters in North Philadelphia who are mostly Black and Latino and also, you know, experiencing poverty. So I've been, you know, working with a team, Philly Boricuas, and we've been going out into the neighborhoods. which, you know, is just something we felt we had to do despite it being the pandemic. There is still a lot of fear and precaution. So a lot of the voter outreach you see is done over the phone and through text message and social media. But we know there's a huge digital divide. So that's why we have been going to parks and community centers. So tomorrow we'll be at a Latino supermarket doing a big event there, trying to explain to people how to get mail-in ballots. As you know, Pennsylvania is a battleground state, and there's a huge number of new Latinos to Philadelphia as a result of the earthquakes and hurricane disasters in Puerto Rico resulting from the climate crisis. So I've been pretty busy. I also joined the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, and my brother from another mother, Tahid, is working on his end with PABJ, and we're trying to shift coverage on a number of different things. Of course, Latinos have their own set of needs. You know, we would like more Spanish language information. And when it comes to like the Spanish language media, like Telemundo, Univision, and how they cover cannabis, there's still a lot of work to be done. And if you look at the state level on a public health, you know, communications perspective, Latinos still can't really access medical marijuana in Pennsylvania. And so there's a lot of outreach and communication that needs to be done to be able to get the information to my community. The way that all this stuff intersects is like, you know, at a very basic level, like access to communication, information is a human right. We need information that's accurate, that's reflective of our communities to be able to be more engaged and active, right? And hopefully people who are more informed and civically engaged can contribute to their own liberation. So that's why I do the work that I do. I have to consume a lot of cannabis in order to deal with all of this. So it is definitely both fueled my advocacy and helped treat my anxiety. But, you know, never a boring day here in Philadelphia on the front lines. And so I will keep you posted. You can follow me at NewsDrawn or on Facebook, as you said, and see my daily dispatches and rants about all things happening in Philly.
Well, one follow-up question for you. Anything to say to our president who had that comment recently about bad things happen in Philadelphia?
Well, bad things happen in the White House too, apparently, and on Air Force One. Yeah. You know, I would actually, people in Philly said, yeah, it's true, right? Like we have, they're the biggest poor city in the country. We have a rising rate of gun violence. We have schools that are falling apart and underfunded. We have roads and dilapidated homes that need repaired. You know, our federal funding continues to be cut for vital social programs. Yes, bad things are happening as a result of your bad policies and the way that you have disavowed people of color and poor and working people. So we need to do something about that. It's what he's saying is not true, but good things happen in Philadelphia too, because people are fighting back. They're organizing, they're informing themselves, they're mobilizing people. And hopefully when we get out the vote, we'll see some better things happening in terms of like changing the people who are in power.
Thanks for that. Tahid, you live in Philadelphia as well, Tahid?
I technically now live in South Jersey outside of Philadelphia, but my work for Free Press with my colleague Vanessa is focused and emphasized in Philadelphia. I used to live in Philadelphia for 2 years.
Would you like to weigh in on that question about Trump's comment?
Well, first and foremost, thank you for having me be a part of this. And I'm just, you know, happy to be on this prestigious panel with so many people, including a person like Vanessa, who I consider a mentor of mine. So to even share this space with her is a huge honor. But, you know, in terms of comments on Trump, like, you know, he says what he says just to get people stirred up. You know, we have bigger issues that we need to focus on. So for him to call out Philadelphia is nothing new. We kind of have an understanding of what Philly feels like against Trump. So, you know, for me to see that comment, it is what it is. You see a whole lot of T-shirts happening, which is, you know, expected to see people really rally around the Philadelphia pride. But, you know, I'm not too worried about his emphasis on our city. We have a whole lot of things that we need to focus on. So if people want to help out with all the issues that Vanessa brought up with Philly, we can certainly use that support. So I'm glad he set it out, because now people are looking at Philly, and hopefully some of the resources will come to our communities.
Okay, so fill me in on what have you been up to over the last 6 months, and what kind of work are you doing right now?
Yeah, so like Vanessa, I also joined Free Press, which is a media policy and media advocacy organization. My focus specifically is on a long-term project in Philadelphia focused on basically transforming and reimagining how journalists cover crime, police, public safety, and the criminal legal system. And it's a twofold type of project. It's one, working with journalists to make sure that they are centering and elevating the perspectives and expertise of people impacted by policing and the criminal legal system, mostly Black and Brown and disproportionately Black and Brown communities, and also working with community organizers, community activists, and community members to feel empowered to tell their stories, tell their narratives, and get the information that is vital for them to understand and navigate these complex systems that are very suppressive and oppressive. And as we know, historically, media has never been reflective of these communities, so we are building an information structure and information tree that really accurately and adequately addresses this information when the local news media ecosystem isn't doing a sufficient job in informing us. So it's a really cool project. It's a really good way to really think about the shortfalls that media, that local media and commercial media typically has, and trying to find best ways to keep us all informed so that we can be more civically and politically engaged to transform these institutions. So I've been busy working on that front in Philadelphia. I also just launched this past Saturday the CanAtlantic Conference, which was referenced, which was the country's first mid-Atlantic cannabis conference virtually, focused on equity, media, and policy for those who were inside and outside and just interested in the cannabis space. So that was a long-term project that I had been working on since last year. We were supposed to launch in April of this year. Obviously, COVID threw a wrench in that, so we pushed that into a digital format later in September, and we finally launched. So if you're interested in learning about the mid-Atlantic cannabis markets, check out CanAtlantic Conference. We had an awesome amount of different organizers and organizations on the ground in the region talking about their state of state cannabis markets and what legalization might look like moving forward. And we know that New Jersey is going to legalize, or most likely will legalize, in November. What does that mean for the rest of the region? How is that domino effect going to impact this region that has a lot of Black and Brown communities? And specifically with a city like Philadelphia, which is a 44% Black population, and a city like Vanessa mentioned has a 25% poverty rate, what does legalization mean in Pennsylvania, and how can that potentially impact our communities here? So that just got launched off the ground, and I'm very excited to continue that conversation too. I'm also a cannabis patient. I suffer from an autoimmune deficiency disorder called ulcerative colitis. And for those who might have not heard about that, but may know or have heard of Crohn's disease, it's within that similar family. So it's been really scary. It's been really scary for me to see this pandemic just go out of control and have our leadership at all levels fail in addressing and adequately addressing these issues. As a Black disabled man, I don't have the certain privileges that a lot of people still take for granted. And it's kind of hard to see, you know, people that I know within my network be able to go out, socialize with or without masks. And I think there needs to be a lot more emphasis on the disability community and the things that we have access to and the things that we don't have access to. So it's been really difficult seeing that, because, you know, I do want to be outside. I do want to participate in rallies. I have to figure out my own space and my own ability to contribute to some of these causes, like getting people out to vote, like talking about cannabis and rallying around cannabis legalization and reparations in the cannabis space. But I have to do it from a very particular position, because I can't expose myself. You know, I'm part of that bucket of, if I get COVID, you know, I'm not good to anybody if I'm dead. So I have to be really, really cautious about my health. And I think that puts a really different perspective in how I operate in this pandemic, because I just don't have those luxuries. You know, even going out to do a grocery run is dangerous for me. Even going out and walking on a trail, even if there's a lot of people that are spaced out, that's still a danger to me, because I don't have an immune system. I have a compromised and a suppressed immune system. A lot of this has really altered my way of navigating in this world, and it's put a lot of stress on me too. So shout out to Vanessa to also saying I consume a lot of cannabis to help with my anxiety as well, and to keep my stress levels low, because if I stress too much, I will have a trigger. And if I trigger, I'm going to have a flare-up, and I might end up in the hospital. And that's the last thing that I want to be doing right now as a patient. So it's been an interesting few couple of months. The shift from relocating from Philly into my grandparents' house for the time being has been nice. It's been nice to be able to at least walk around and experience a little bit of fresh air, where you're not living into, you know, kind of condensed and consolidated spaces like in cities. So it has been a little bit of a positive impact. And I've been just trying to find the silver lining to all of this. You know, I think there are definitely silver linings that people can find that can help, you know, improve our mental health, or at least keep us a little bit stable during this time. But, you know, I would be lying if I said it was an easy shift. You know, this has all been really difficult for everybody. So to everyone who's kind of like, you know, also in the same boat, feeling anxious, feeling like you're not doing enough, feeling like, you know, like you should be doing more, you know, take time for yourself. This is the time for you to really focus on your health, focus on your mental health, especially, and just know that, you know, you're not alone in this. You're not alone in your anxiety. You're not alone in your fear. And by connecting with people, hopefully we can make this all out together. So.
That's from a panel at this year's virtual Seattle Hemp Fest. Speakers included Angela Baca, a freelance writer and investigative journalist from Southern California, Taid Chappelle, a journalist who works at Free Press in Philadelphia, Kimon Freeman, a writer and performer who co-founded and directs We Act Radio in Washington, D.C., Vanessa Maria Graber, a journalist and radio producer in Philadelphia, and moderator Steve Bloom, a journalist, editor, and publisher of CelebStoner.com. We'll be back in a moment. This is Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Welcome back. I'm Doug McVeigh, and you're listening to Free Culture Radio. Let's hear more from that HempFest Hemposium panel. Speakers include Angela Baca, Taid Chappelle, Kimon Freeman, Vanessa Maria Graber, and Steve Bloom.
I'm going to switch to Angela, and you'll notice that even though this is Seattle HempFest, this is a very East Coast dominated panel, and we have one representative of the West Coast, and it's Angela Baca. Angela, you live in Santa Barbara?
Near Santa Barbara, yeah. City of Lompoc.
Okay, so Angela has been involved, as Doug said, in the cannabis community for years. As she worked, I first met you, and you know, when you were working with Ed Rosenthal, you've gone on to be a really strong cannabis journalist. And one of the things you're famous for is your long form articles. I mean, articles that really are in depth, multi part articles that go on. You know, it's a commitment to read. Really, really good work, good research. So tell us what you've been up to lately and what's life like in California.
You know, life has been pretty rough in California lately. We haven't had a lot of clean air to breathe, and we just got some in the last couple of days and lost it again because of new fires. So you can't see it as well right now, but the sky is kind of orange here. I'm down in the city of Lompoc, which is 2 hours north of Los Angeles. And I grew up in this town, although I'm from South LA originally. It's always been kind of a sad little town with a sad, slow economy. After Prop 64 passed in California, we became one of the only cities in California to license a complete free market. So we added pretty much no rules over the state, no tax over the state, and everything goes, including social consumption lounges. So this tiny little town has actually gotten 50 to 60 new businesses in the last year. And even with the COVID recession, we're padding our budgets pretty heavily. We have 16 dispensaries in a town with 43,000 people. So we have more than most states per capita here right now, probably most of these East Coast states we're talking about. And on that note, that's where a lot of my focus has been on the markets. Coming from the West Coast and coming from that early medical market, I saw how a completely unregulated market for commercial cannabis led to a diversity of product, a diversity of genetics in the cannabis itself, and a diversity of people who are involved in that. And because of that, we've had crazy innovations and so many great genetics and so many great growing methods coming out of the West Coast. What we've seen is as everybody in the country watched that happen on the West Coast and wanted the same thing, it was kind of preempted once it got east of the Rockies. Almost all of the states out there ended up with these literal cartel markets where the government would restrict just a small amount of licenses to serve the entire market. I know in New York, I think you started with 10 we have more than that in my tiny little town here in Southern California right now. So a lot of my focus has been on the economics of this and how it does or doesn't actually achieve the goals of legalization that we have set out for when we do this. When we talk about social equity in licensing, you can't band-aid a program that was designed as a cartel for very wealthy people by giving one license away to one person who represents an equity diversity. You need to bring down the barriers to entry of the market and allow people to have small business ownership again, like they did in the early West Coast markets, which are also being consolidated ahead of federal legalization with the state-federal conflict and the way our oversupply has been handled within California and Oregon. What we need to see happen is the federal government to step down and decriminalize and deschedule, and we need to see free markets encouraged in more places. I would say the best example of this right now is Oklahoma, where you see more community ownership than any other part of this country, including the West or the East Coast. So for me, what I've been working on, over the last 10 years, I've traveled all over the country. I've lived in various different places. I was in the Bay Area for 10 years. I was in Utah for a year and a half where I worked on their medical cannabis bill and then also covered that state from a block away from the from the Capitol, becoming the first state in the country to become a CBD-only state. And what happened behind the scenes in that state before things then followed all the rest of the country, Florida setting up their CBD cartel. From there, I was also able to be in Colorado as legalization was rolling out there, and Nevada and Oregon and a few other places. In 2015, the day cannabis became legal in Oregon, I moved to Portland, Oregon, and I was there for the last 4 years before I came back home to celebrate what happened in my own hometown. And so I've had a pretty diverse view of how these markets have been shaped in different places. I've spent a lot of time reporting in Arkansas, Oklahoma, Missouri, Florida, and a handful of other kind of conservative states where it's really restrictive. And because of this, I've been working for the last 2.5 years, and I'm getting close to being able to put together a book that looks at the last 10 years of the Green Rush and how all of these different state markets rolling out were actually kind of connected and not completely separate. And the point of it was to create a consolidated market that looks more like everything else we see in big agriculture or big business or highly restricted markets like tobacco and alcohol. Other than that, I've been working on editing and managing the new revised version of Ed Rosenthal's Marijuana Growers Handbook. So between those two books and the fact that I, like Taid, also have Crohn's disease, have been pretty much in lockdown here. And that's worked out pretty well for me because I'm working on two books at the moment. But I totally hear what you're saying about what's going on in the streets right now, because for the last 10, 15 years, especially in the Bay Area, I was always down there seeing these things firsthand and understanding what's actually happening on the ground and not what's happening on CNN or even your local media coverage. And so being someone with a compromised immune system, it's such a weird time to have to see everything from inside a bubble instead of being able to do that. So whatever we can do to support the reporters who are actually able to be out there right now is where I think we should all focus. I'll step back on that.
Thanks a lot, Angela. Appreciate that. I was going to come back to the East Coast now, and we're going to talk to Kimone Freeman, who lives in D.C. So, Kimone, tell us what you've been up to over the last, 6 months or so, COVID period, and, what's going on in your career?
I'm just thrilled. I'm one of those people that's just excited about this special period that we're in. Let me share a quote with you from Milton Friedman, who was not a friend of the progressive, no part, but even a broke clock is right twice a day. He went on to say, only a crisis, actual or perceived, produces real change. When that crisis occurs, the actions that are taken depend on the ideas that are laying around. That, I believe, is our basic function, to develop alternatives to existing policies to keep them alive and available until the politically impossible becomes the politically inevitable. I have been working diligently to develop alternatives to existing policies during this time, because I think the COVID-19 crisis has exposed all the fault lines in America's system, from healthcare to criminal justice, is all on display. And so we at Gradio, as an independent outlet in D.C., has expanded tremendously during this period. We're doing exceptionally well. I can't dance in the end zone because so many people are not able to say that. We was there June 1st when Bill Barr sicked his goons on peaceful protesters We covered that. Most of the footage that was seen from that is our footage. It was everyone from the Washington Post to 60 Minutes aired our footage. We had millions of views. And so we're excited to be a part of supporting the Black Lives Matter movement for justice in these cases. And then on top of that, the impending housing crisis. We have hosted solutions to the housing crisis because in D.C. and in many cities across America, a third of the renters are behind their rent. Some people are behind their mortgage. And we're about to see capitalism put on trial if we don't have, they don't embrace, alternatives to existing policies to see that canceling rent is going to be necessary to prevent massive evictions in this country. I'd like to see what would happen if this country says to you that they cannot afford to cancel rent for a third of the country, but they can't afford to evict a third of the country. In the midst of a pandemic, during a contested election, we would see chaos at a level we have not seen before. I think this country is now finally on trial, and we are in the midst of a revolution. Martin Luther King said, remaining awake during a great revolution. And that's where we are. And then the opportunity to be with you guys here today is thrilling as well, because journalism is the second draft of history. And even with the decriminalization or the legalization of weed in over 20 states, including District of Columbia, who is not a state, taxation by representation is very real here. But the harmful stereotypes in marijuana consumers, about marijuana consumers, still persist. Just recently, I was in a gun store, and I saw a sign that says, you're not allowed to purchase a gun in the state of Maryland if you have a medical marijuana card. You know, so you lose your Second Amendment right by exercising the renewed ability to possess marijuana legally. So this is where we are. America is in a unique space right now, and I think all of the hypocrisies of our legal system is being brought to bear. And so it's exciting to see it being examined and re-examined and hopefully challenged and overcome.
You just heard Angela Baca, a freelance writer and investigative journalist based in Southern California, Taheed Chappelle, a journalist who works at Free Press in Philadelphia, Kimon Freeman, the co-founder and director of We Act Radio in Washington, D.C., Vanessa Maria Graber, a journalist and radio producer in Philadelphia, and Steve Bloom, a journalist, editor, and publisher of CelebStoner.com. They were on a panel at this year's Seattle Hempfest. And that's it. Thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Thank you to everyone out there who's fighting for civil rights, human rights, and social justice. A big thank you to our engineer. And of course, thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it. Theme music for Free Culture Radio is by Tom Nickel and Four Dimensional Nightmare. Find Free Culture Radio on the web at kboo.fm/freeculture. Free Culture Radio is on Facebook at facebook.com/KBOO Free Culture Radio. Please give it a like. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!